This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Today on the Afternoon Magazine, what makes a great bookstore? Why do so many of us love to spend time in bookstores? We're going to hear the story this afternoon of a great bookstore in New York City. Unfortunately, it is no more. Books and Company. It's a story for everyone who loves to read. Books and Company was in business for close to 20 years, located on Manhattan's Upper East Side. It was much loved by readers and writers. Its customers included Woody Allen, Fran Lebowitz, Susan Sontag, Truman Capote, and Brendan Gill. It was the site of readings by hundreds of writers. But Books and Company found itself up against a skyrocketing real estate market. Big chains and discount stores. To survive would have required a radical makeover, and that was not in keeping with the owner's idea of the store. Jeanette Watson called her store a 19th century idea. Our guest this afternoon is writer Lynn Tillman. She's written a history of Books and Company. The book is also biography. Its title, Bookstore, The Life and Times of Jeanette Watson and Books and Company. Listeners, you can join the conversation with a telephone call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Lynn Tillman is a novelist. Her most recent novel, No Lease on Life, was a 1998 National Book Critics Circle Award finalist. She's the author of a collection of essays, The Broad Picture, and The Velvet Years, Warhol's Factory, 1965 to 1967. She is co-director of the writing department of Bard College's MFA program. Lynn Tillman's new book, Bookstore, is published by Harcourt, Brace and Company. Lynn Tillman, good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Although you shopped at Books and Company, and it carried your books, Books and Company wasn't your bookstore.
That's right. I live downtown in Manhattan, and my bookstore is the one closest to me called St. Mark's Bookshop, another very good independent bookstore. I did go up to Books and Company every once in a while and did go to some readings there because it was a kind of magnet. It did have this special quality to it that most bookstores don't have, in part because Jeanette Watson wanted to make it into something more like a salon, part of that 19th century idea that she had. And so I attended, I'd say about 5 or 10 readings over the years, and went into it more often than that. It was next door to the Whitney Museum of American Art, and when I would go up to the Whitney, I would go next door to Books and Company, which was something a lot of people did.
Yeah. When and how did you become acquainted with Jeanette Watson?
Well, it's interesting. She was looking for somebody to write a 20-year anniversary, 20th anniversary book. The bookstore was going to be 20 years old, and she wanted to commemorate it with this small book. And she interviewed anywhere from, 12 to 20 people, and was not happy with the results of these interviews. And she asked Ira Silverberg, who's a friend of mine and who was her publicist, could he recommend somebody? And he said, well, do you know Lynn Tillman's book, The Velvet Years? And she said, well, I've heard of it, but I haven't read it. So he sent it to her, and she read it immediately. Jeanette's a very, very fast reader. And she loved it and asked if I would be interviewed by her. And it was very funny. I went up for the interview, and somehow or other I thought I had the job, and even beforehand, and she showed me all these scrapbooks and things, and she just liked my response. In fact, she was testing me, but I didn't know that. She'd done the same thing with every other writer she had interviewed, and she offered me the job. And so I had just finished writing No Lease on Life, and it had just been sold to Harcourt Brace. And I thought, well, good, I'll do this nonfiction project, and it'll be sort of similar to The Velvet Years. It'll take me maybe 8 months. So I signed a contract with Jeanette to do this small book for her. And within a month and a half after signing the contract, the bookstore was going to close. And that changed everything. Mm-hmm. It turned out, I could not now make a 20th anniversary book. It had to be, I realized, a substantive history of Books and Company. And also, it became very clear to me as I was beginning my work on the book, which the first work consisted of reading all the files that Jeanette had kept, all the letters, and interviewing Jeanette. I interviewed her 20 times over a period of 6 months, that she was an integral part of this bookstore, that her life and the life of the bookstore were completely intertwined, because it was her desire to make a bookstore that had started this thing anyway. So it became a project that took me, I guess, about 2.5 years from start to finish, rather than the 8 months that I thought it was going to take. And it became a very different book from what I originally planned to do.
The book is not unlike a bookstore because it holds so many stories.
That's what I really wanted it to be. I mean, as I was working on it, people would say to me, "Oh, a book about a bookstore? How, you know, can that really be interesting?" You know, it was very discouraging. And I said, "Of course, it can be interesting." And because my vision for it was that this is a place that we walk into, and when we come into it, each of us brings our lives with us. The books are so meaningful to us. It's a place that we go to, sources for understanding, for knowledge, and so they're extremely important, and emotionally we're attached to them, and we're attached to bookstores because they have them, you know. And then when I was interviewing, I interviewed 67 people, and one of the things that I realized was that I didn't know how a bookstore worked. Here I was, a writer, somebody who'd gone into bookstores all my life, but I really didn't understand why certain books got on the shelves in one bookstore and didn't in another, you know, how these choices were made. So I had my project was to also inform the reader of what this bookstore thing is, you know, how it works, how difficult it is to make a good bookstore. And then all the people I interviewed, their lives, I mean, for instance, there's a man, a sales representative, Ed Solowitz, and he used to visit Books and Company. He was the sales rep from Harcourt Brace. And when I was interviewing him, the way he got to be a sales rep was just fascinating. And so his story is in the book, and it's not, I think, what somebody who would expect if they were just thinking, well, this is a book about a bookstore. It's really about the lives of people who enter bookstores and who have things to do with bookstores.
Yeah. It's very much a portrait of the store, its customers, the owner, and everybody who came through the door.
Yes, that's right. And the variety of kinds of people and the kinds of stories that I heard were sometimes so incredibly moving and sometimes so funny, you know, from employees, bookstore employees talking about how they dealt with shoplifting to, you know, somebody talking about the feeling that they could become a writer sitting on that green couch upstairs on the second floor of Books and Company.
How did they deal with shoplifters?
How did they what?
How did they deal with shoplifters?
Well, mostly they just let them go. They just, they didn't pursue them. Occasionally they would pursue them, but apparently, legally, once they're out of the store, there's not too much you can do. You can try to stop them in the store, but there's not too much you can do once they leave the premises. You can try to, you know, scare them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the staff had varying degrees of response to these people.
I wonder if they almost had kind of a respect for someone who would steal a book.
Maybe in some way there would be some of that.
A grudging admiration.
Grudging, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
You write in the book, each independent bookstore has its own identity, its own ambiance. How is a bookstore's identity shaped?
That's a very interesting question. From what I understand, it's first shaped by its owner's relationship to books and what they think books should be, you know, and for instance, Jeanette had this idea that books offered other worlds to people and could make their lives better. And then that kind of idea then gets to their buyer, you know, who they choose to actually buy the books, to work with the sales reps in ordering from different companies. you know, Jeanette didn't carry bestsellers mostly. She would sometimes she would carry a few bestsellers, but she would try to have books that a lot of other bookstores wouldn't carry or wouldn't have, or she would order lots more, or the buyer would order lots more of those. So you would expect when you went into Books and Company to see books on their tables that you hadn't seen somewhere else, and not the regular thing. They were trying to buy for people who were so interested in books that they were always looking for that novelty, you know, that special book, as well as books that were classics. You know, they had the thing that was very unusual about Books and Company was this idea called The Wall. And The Wall was the idea of Bert Britton, who was Jeanette's original partner. And The Wall was supposed to be all the great works of literature kept, you know, on these shelves so that and current stuff as well, of course, as the classics, and so that anyone entering the bookstore could go over and I think one of my people I interviewed, Ted Willen, said, have a meal for the rest of the day. And so having that wall, was a very special quality of Books and Company. And if you go into different independent bookstores, for instance, St. Mark's, the one that's in my neighborhood, or Three Lives, that's in Greenwich Village, or in Seattle, Elliott Bay, all the different independents across the country focus on or have different ways of placing their books, getting the reader to notice. Sometimes they'll have staff do write-ups about different books that they've liked and read. There's an involvement that they show you through how the books are displayed and what the staff knows about them.
Yeah. Now, outside of The Wall, how did the people who worked at Books and Company help readers who came in and maybe they weren't sure what they were looking for?
Well, Jeanette told me that usually you could tell immediately when somebody walked in whether they wanted to be helped or not, that some people just sort of rushed right past the salespeople or the people at the desk and just went to look, and those people weren't bothered. But other people would sort of come up to the salespeople and say something like, my uncle is going to be 70, and I'm looking for a book, and for him for the birthday. And then depending upon the salesperson, they would ask different questions. And for the salespeople, this was one of the most interesting or involving parts of the day, because finding out what books somebody would like to have was sometimes like being a detective or a psychoanalyst, you know, and really getting the right book for that person would be a kind of major accomplishment, finding something that they might not have thought of. And so they would ask different questions the way a detective might. Well, what was the last book that your uncle read? Did he read many mysteries before? You know, that kind of thing, trying to find the book. And, of course, it means that the staff has to be knowledgeable about books and has to be keeping abreast with new books as well as knowing about old ones.
Yeah. It is also interesting to hear Jeanette Watson talk about the drama of introducing someone to a book. Mm-hmm. Dramatic, she says, because books can and do change people's lives.
That's right. That's right. And I think that Jeanette feels this so strongly. And when she talks about a book, when she tells you the story of the book or what it's about, it's a kind of look comes over her face. I would say it was joy. She is so happy to be telling somebody else about this book that she's read or that she's loved or that she's found interesting. And I think if you were speaking to her right now, she'd say one of the greatest accomplishments she felt at Books and Company was one of her customers only used to read, you know, kind of really trashy books, which have their place, you know. But Jeanette got her to read Balzac. And the woman started reading Balzac and just loving it and would not have read Balzac had Jeanette not, you know, led her there. Mm. And of course, when you read a great writer or are introduced to ideas that are articulated beautifully and are important ideas, your world does change some. You do open up. And that's why I think that it was, for me, as I was talking to people, interviewing people for the book, an incredibly moving experience. I mean, I would sometimes be in tears as people were talking to me about their experiences with books. Yeah. Because it's such an intimate, you know, people worry, where is the book going to be, or, you know, because of the internet and all of this. And I think that my feeling is that books are such an amazing way of delivering information to us. Very handy, you know, you can carry them around and you can read them at your own speed. They don't move faster than you want them to move, unlike a movie or a TV program. And so it's a very intimate experience. It's very, you know, but you do have to shut out a lot of the world to read a book. You have to, you know, things have to kind of close down around you to let yourself enter into a book. And In our lives, everything's so fast, and there's so much information coming in all the time. It's sometimes hard to take that time for yourself.
It may be one of the few places where we can slow down.
Yes, I think that's true. I always feel when I start reading something and let myself, you know, move into it, that I am creating my own world. In those moments, and that it's a different world from the world that I'm ordinarily in.
As one might imagine, Jeanette Watson has loved books from the time she was a child.
Right.
What did books offer her?
Well, from what I understand, I think that they were an escape into other worlds and other lives that she maybe wanted for her own, and just fired her imagination. I think she was very shy when she was a child, and I write about that in the book. And in fact, doing the bookstore helped her overcome some of her shyness. Having, you know, meeting people in the bookstore, being forced to introduce authors at readings and so on. But I think initially she was a very shy child, and I think reading was like her best friend. I think Susan Sontag talks about that experience also of feeling that books were her friends.
Yeah. You know, thinking of Jeanette Watson, thinking of her as a child kind of running away with books, and then later on in the store, people like Truman Capote would come in and say, "Let's run away."
Yes, yes. And she would run away with him to the Hotel Carlyle, which was just up the block. And, of course, he was, I think, such an amusing and both happy and sad figure, you know, at that time. Such a great writer.
Yeah.
And I always think that his having written In Cold Blood really did it to him, you know, just having written that book and all the, what he saw and what he wrote about, and then being in love with one of the killers, just, I think, must have really just wrecked him, you know. But she had, I think, a fun friendship with him. He was filled with gossip.
yeah, wonderful stories.
Yes, yes.
At the age of 13... she was quite taken with Lawrence of Arabia,
right,
and Rasputin.
Right. Well, she had, I sort of draw an analogy in there in the book. Her father was the head of IBM, Tom Watson Jr., and her grandfather had started IBM. And her grandfather had come, was from a poor family. So there was a real rags-to-riches tale, and of course, one of the extraordinary things about Jeanette is that she came from this family of great wealth, and her desire was to start a bookstore, which is, you know, not about the most entrepreneurial thing you can do. I think Fran Lebowitz talks about it. You know, if you started a business, you know, it wouldn't be a bookstore to make money. Something that she did out of love. But her father and her grandfather, I can imagine, were sort of like Lawrence of Arabia and you know, kind of these incredible larger-than-life figures. And so I can imagine that reading about Rasputin and Lawrence of Arabia was not exactly a home movie, but there was a way in which she could understand her father and grandfather through them, maybe.
Yeah. It sounds like that she had a wonderful relationship with her father.
I think it was very good, and I think that she respected him a great deal, and so his support of the bookstore was very important to her.
Yeah, he put up half the money.
Yes, in the beginning, and then she was able to pay him back. And in the first 10 years of the business, of the bookstore did very, very well. That was till about 1988, and she was able to pay her salespeople, her staff well, and she was able to give them vacation time, and you know, all of these things that you associate with businesses who you also associate with making more money. But then by 1988 or so, things began to change with the superstores coming in, and that had a huge effect.
We're talking this afternoon about a bookstore that lived once upon a time in New York City. The name of the store, Books and Company. It was founded by Jeanette Watson. Our guest this afternoon is Lynn Tillman. She's the author of Bookstore, The Life and Times of Jeanette Watson and Books and Company. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you've got questions or comments, give us a call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else you're listening in Illinois or Indiana, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Who is Bert Britton?
Bert Britton was Jeanette's original partner, and he had been at the Strand bookstore. The Strand is famous in New York City for having over 8 million books. It's a used bookstore, and you can find out-of-print books, and everything is, you know, discounted by half, and it's a tremendous treasure trove in the city. Something like, well, there are bookstores like it around, but I think about Powell's in Portland has used books as well as new books on the same shelves under the same authors. So it's a kind of great, great store. And he, I think he ran the review department. Review books are sent out to writers from companies, and then writers bring them in and sell them at half price. And, in fact, Fran Lebowitz talks about that in the book. You know, she says you can tell that books aren't really worth anything in our culture if they'd send it to, you know, every writer, you know, hoping for a review, and then all of them would go sell them at the Strand and other places like that.
Because they had to pay the rent.
That's right. And she said at one point he gave her, for some books she brought in, almost three-quarters of her rent for that month. So he was very beloved by writers, and he knew all the contemporary authors. And he had that kind of knowledge that Jeanette, who was more schooled in the classics, didn't have. And so when she decided she wanted to start a bookstore, and she had had this dream, she'd had hip surgery. And while she was laid up for months with hip surgery, she had this dream. And in the dream, she saw the bookstore, and she saw the bookstore as she wanted it to be. So she decided she must do it, and she wanted to get a partner because I think she felt she couldn't do it on her own. She didn't know enough about the book business. So she was told, I think it was Steve Aronson, who is a friend of hers, mentioned Bert Britton to her, and then others did as well. And they had meetings, and maybe after a couple of meetings, he agreed to do it, and that started their partnership, which lasted a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. What were his contributions to the identity of the store, the store's ambiance?
I think he made an enormous contribution. She, her contribution was that she knew she wanted great books, she knew she wanted a salon, She knew she wanted to have readings there. She wanted to have a bookstore that had two floors and the readings would be upstairs. He brought in the contemporary writers. He knew all these writers. And they started out the bookstore with having books signed by contemporary authors. For instance, Allen Ginsberg, Jeanette remembers, and the story is told in the book, going to his house in the middle of the night and Bert having to bring up cartons of his books to the top floor of a five-floor walk-up, and Ginsberg signed all of them, and then Bert having to bring them back down again. So they started out the bookstore with signed copies, and that was an unusual thing to do as well. And so the writers gravitated to Books and Company because of Bert, I think. He knew a lot of people, and it became kind of instantly successful because of that, or instantly known.
Mm. Now, he had a secret list of great books, and
yes,
this is something that Jeanette had as well. Now, her list of 50 is published at the back of the bookstore. Why are these lists secret, and why did she divulge hers?
I think it's because when booksellers are selling books, they're in a way supposed to be responding to the customer and the reader when they come in as if to a blank page, in a sense, you know, finding out the reader's desires. And if you sort of have an agenda, if there are books that you always recommend, you may not want customers to know that these are the books that will keep popping up when people say, what should I read, you know?
Uh-huh.
Rather than saying, well, what do you like to read? What have you read last? You know, these are books that Jeanette or I didn't know Bert. Jeanette or Bert would have in their minds as books that they could always count on, that they themselves loved. And some of these books were the same, I think. And then Bert opened up a lot of worlds to Jeanette by telling her about books that she hadn't known about.
So a good bookseller and a customer, they do a dance.
They absolutely do, and that's why I think these independent bookstores are so intimate and interesting. The other day, about a couple of months ago, I was in Three Lives bookstore watching Jenny Fader sell a book to a customer. And this is Three Lives is a very small bookstore, a very good small bookstore, physically small. This woman walked in, and Jenny walked over to her. They greeted each other, and Jenny said, I've just read two books that I think you really would love, you know? And the woman just bought them. I mean, it was just amazing. There was no argument. There was no, you know, she trusted that Jenny knew the kind of books that she would like. And I was very impressed, you know, very, very impressed.
Well, I suppose it's not unlike, like if you have a restaurant that you're fond of. And they know you.
That's right.
And you come in and you sit down and they say, I've got something for you today.
That's right. And it's a wonderful feeling, isn't it, when that happens?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think part of what makes any city or town that much more livable is the sense that you are connected with people in all sorts of different ways, and having a bookstore that you love to go to where people know you, or a restaurant, or the shoemaker. You know, I have a shoemaker that I always go to, you know, and I wouldn't think of not going to this shoemaker.
Would you talk with us about Jeanette Watson and Fran Lebowitz and how they struck up a really, really cool friendship?
I think that they met through another friend of Jeanette's. I think they met through Jacqueline Weld, who is both a novelist and a biographer, and she's in the book also. She wrote a biography of Peggy Guggenheim, and about 10, 12 years ago that came out. And I believe it was Jackie who knew Fran, but exactly how they met, I don't know. What I do know is that every year, for many years, they celebrate their birthdays together. And there may be one other, and Jane Stanton Hitchcock, who's also in the book, and has written two mysteries. She too is part of this birthday club, and for 20 years or so, they've been going out for dinner on their birthdays, which I guess, you know, maybe it's fallen off. I'm not sure. As one gets older, sometimes happens.
Yeah. Well, thinking now about books, and we talked a moment ago about, you know, a restaurant, sitting down and having someone offer you a special. In the book, Jeanette Watson says that, you know, well, Fran loves to eat.
Yes.
And I was wondering if, and then from there you take us to something that Fran has to say.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you have the book there with you.
Yes.
If you would read that.
Okay.
That it's it starts at the bottom of page 69.
Okay. When I was constructing this book, that was one of my ideas, was that I could move from the way I'd written Jeanette into these other characters who would augment or move away from what Jeanette had said. So do you want me to read what Jeanette has said, or just go right into Fran?
I think go right into Fran, unless you have a strong feeling otherwise.
No, this is fine.
Okay.
I'm an exceptionally talented eater. I'm very interested in food. I think about food quite a bit. I read cookbooks. I love to eat, but I don't love to cook. Not liking to cook probably is just part of my general slothfulness. There are a lot of things that conspire against me working, probably the primary one being I'm just incredibly lazy. I'm slothful. You cannot imagine how lazy I am. I never understand all these people saying they love to work. They'd work whether they had to work or not. In fact, I know a number of people who don't have to work, but work. I think of them as fools. I was born to be an heiress. I could easily fill my days with pleasure. I have everything necessary to be an heiress except money. Jeanette is an heiress, and she works. Absurd. Every writer would like to have a bookstore. I would love to have a bookstore. In fact, if I win the lottery, I plan on having a bookstore. A bookstore with a door policy. It would not be open to the general public. There would definitely be someone at the door, and that person would be me. Jeanette lets you smoke in her office. Very important. She's a real bookseller. All booksellers should be like Jeanette. I don't mean, obviously, exactly like Jeanette, but owning a bookstore, being a bookseller, was never a very lucrative endeavor. It's a passion as opposed to a business, in the sense that if you're going to go to all the trouble of going to work every day and having a store, almost any other kind of store would be more lucrative. Almost any other thing that you could think of that people could sell, people want to buy more than books. I'm a bulk buyer. I buy many books at a time. I went to Books and Company about once a month, but Jeanette would also send them over to the house, a full-service bookstore. It's better for me to call, in the same way if you were a drunk, it would be better to call the bar, because then just the number of drinks you initially started out wanting would come to your house. It would be better to call and say, would you send 6 martinis over, than to go to the bar where you would have endless drinks. I read when I'm supposed to be writing. I read all day. I know about being a junkie. This is what I do instead of heroin. It's much more expensive than heroin, but it's more glamorous. Ever since I learned to read, I'd spend most of my time reading, less when I was a kid because I had to go to school all day. I had to go to school, which really interfered with my education. I decided to be a writer when I learned to read. I should have realized that I was going to be a reader, but somehow I thought I would make that transition more easily than I have. I'm reading so I don't have to write. I'm not writing because I'm reading. I reserve all of my terror for writing.
The words of Fran Lebowitz, read by Lynn Tillman, from the book Bookstore, The Life and Times of Jeanette Watson and Books and Company. Now, this passage, was this written by Fran and given to you, or?
No. All of this are from interviews I did with them on tape.
Yeah.
So then I had transcripts. I had hundreds and hundreds of pages of transcripts. And so then I edited the transcripts and stayed. I mean, my work as a novelist helped me. I mean, my understanding of character and writing voice helped me, because I tried to stay very close to the voice of the person speaking. You know, when you do oral history, it's never oral once it's on the page. And in order to make something read well on the page and still appear to be spoken is actually a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
So I edited things, but I never changed anyone's words. I never put a word in when to make it easier for myself in some way. What I would do was maybe take out a whole sentence or cut something, but never actually change the articulation.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderfully dramatic.
Good. That's what I wanted it to be.
You know?
And she also has that kind of cadence in her speaking voice. And so I tried to keep that on the page.
Yeah. Well, it's really, really very, very nicely done.
Thank you.
You know, almost from the start, it wasn't very long after Books and Company was open, the store was in trouble financially.
That's right. What happened was that they were buying too many books, and they were buying too many copies of each book, so that the realities of bookselling weren't being addressed in some way. You want a lead when you have a bookstore. You want to, you know, kind of create an audience through the kinds of books that you give them, but you also have to cater to an audience that's already there. And I think that balance was sort of askew. And they had many, many too many books, and they just had no place even to put the books. And then they rented office space or warehouse space next door to them, right on Madison Avenue. It was very expensive in order to just house these books. And so they were losing money, even though they were becoming sort of stars mm-hmm. in the literary bookstore world. They were not actually attending to the bottom line, so to speak.
Yeah. What kind of a process did Books and Company go through in terms of deciding?
I like to feature first-time novelists and help them get their careers started. So there were a lot of first-time novelists who appeared at Books and Company. And in fact, one of the things that I had done for this book, when I realized I had to do this full history, and it was kind of terrifying, you know, the responsibility of it,
uh-huh.
I hired a researcher to research all the readings that had been held at Books and Company over its almost 20 years. Because there hadn't been a list kept or anything like that. And so this researcher, it took him about 4 or 5 months going through different newspapers and old New Yorkers or Village Voices and so on. And he finally put a list together that's not totally complete, but it gives you an idea of what kinds of books were being published over the last 20 years of the 20th century. That's sort of fascinating. And the other thing is, you see, I have listed also the publishers who brought these books out. You see how many publishers no longer exist. It's sort of, so many imprints went out of existence during that period, and that's kind of depressing to see that. So I think a lot of it, sometimes people would recommend authors to Jeanette. Fran, for instance, Fran Lebowitz, Amy Hempel was somebody who would recommend people to Jeanette. Sometimes her staff, if they really loved a writer, they would recommend someone, and if she could get them, she would have them come. So she took suggestions, and she also went with the books that she really cared about.
Yeah. What did the readings mean for the writers? What did they mean to them?
I think, speaking as a writer and speaking from the point of view of somebody who's gone to a lot of readings too. Readings are a kind of amazing event for a writer. You're at your best and your worst on those nights often, because in part writings about communication and being in front of an audience, standing there and reading what you've written can make you feel very tremulous and happy and scared. And sometimes, I remember before my first readings, I was on Valium and alcohol, and I was almost you know, almost not alive by the time I gave a reading. I was so scared. But so for many of us, it's terrifying, and after a while, you get over it. But there's a tremendous pleasure in getting that response or seeing people's faces, because after all, writing is a solitary activity. You're alone in a room, and you can get a sense of the way any performer can of how something is going over in some ways, if you're able to look at the audience. Some writers never look up from their books. They're so terrified they're going to lose their place.
Oh.
But it's a very important event, and it can be a wonderful event, and apparently for people who read at Books and Company, it was often terrific because Jeanette was such a good host.
Yeah. She was very interested in Latin writers and gave them a lot of comfort and a place to call home. And thinking of that, I was thinking back on a little piece that you put in the book from Carlos Fuentes about the atmosphere that writers really need a connection. They need to be sustained.
That's right.
Poor kids.
That's true.
You poor wonderful writers.
I like that phrase. Poor wonderful writers. It is. Yeah, and having a situation in which somebody is glad to have you in their house and makes it possible for an audience to sit in front of you and hear your words. And you know, sometimes people are reluctant to go to readings. They think they won't enjoy them. But most people I know who finally end up going to a reading, sitting down, have that experience of being read to as children, if they were read to as children, hopefully they were. And you get that all over again and sort of go into the world that the writer's making for you there. So I think readings are kind of amazing events. I remember, you know, the first readings I went to were so important to me. And connecting the writer to the work. And, you know, it's not that the writer's biography defines the work, but just sort of seeing the person there. Ah, yes, this person actually was able to do this. Look, you know, not just words on the page, but they're actually standing up there, too.
Our poor, wonderful writer.
Right, right.
Well, it's just been a pleasure talking with you this afternoon, and I want to thank you so much, and I hope down the line we'll have a chance to talk again.
Oh, I hope so, too. It's been a pleasure for me. Thank you so much.
And I want to say to readers, I'm going to take a little note here from Jeanette Watson, where she would, in selling a book, she would say, "This is wonderful. You'll enjoy it. The writing is extraordinary, but I don't want to tell you too much about it." And I hope I haven't said too much about this book. But
thank you.
I do hope that other folks besides myself, lots of folks, will pick it up and enjoy it as much as I have.
Thank you so much.
Lynn Tillman, thank you. Look for Lynn Tillman's book, Bookstore, The Life and Times of Jeanette Watson and Books and Company. The book is published by Harcourt Brace.